How's it going, everyone? I hope this podcast finds you outside, sweating and moving, doing whatever favorite activity that is, whether that's training, doing sport, blowing off some steam, maybe inside planning something, thinking about the dream days, looking at maps, getting the routes down, looking at webcams. I love doing that. I love checking out some webcams up at the top of the mountain just to see what the weather's doing there. Looking at weather forecasts, planning out on different routes and just looking for different roads or different routes to go exploring. I hope this podcast finds you doing something like that. Maybe it's giving you some company to get home the last couple hours of the ride, ski, hike, bike, run, whatever, just to help get you home and give you something to listen to. Or maybe it's just a long drive and you need something to pass the time by. This episode, Felix Mayo. Also, I mean, Rocket Espresso, that's his family. If you know cars, what do you think of when you think of the high performance, top of the line in cars? You think of Ferrari, when the equivalent in coffee would be Rocket Espresso. They make the best coffee machines you can buy. They're the best. They're the biggest. Even in terms of marketing and whatnot goes, that's a product I think is so cool. I would love to own a Rocket one day. It's kind of like a stick in the mud, as I say in this podcast here, for having made it to a certain level when I can justify affording to have a Rocket Espresso machine to make my morning cup of joe with. Felix and I talk about all kinds of stuff, and this podcast is a little bit more casual than some of the other ones, just because Felix and I, we'd been staying in the barn together. You know, when this is during the whole lockdown period of the COVID-19 lockdown. And I guess people are going to look back on it and think of, you know, who did you spend that time with? Or what do you remember that? Felix and I, we were locked down here in Austria for 2 months. He's Italian. Well, he's a Kiwi that moved to Italy, which we'll get into. But Italy was obviously the worst place hit in Europe at the time, so he couldn't go home. So he was staying with me here in the barn in Austria for 2 months. And we had some incredible adventures, which we get into in this show. But it's just, we recorded this on his last day here. And so it's just two buds sitting back, having a conversation. Of course, we talk about Rocket Espresso, which is, some specifics about coffee, as he is the master when it comes to coffee, because he's also in the business. He's young, he's in his early 20s, and he already has his own coffee roasting business. So another thing we talk about is business. We both love business, and we talk about that a little bit, and he tells me a little bit more about his coffee roasting business and how he started his own company doing that way. Felix really is, if I had to describe him to someone, he really is just a good bud. And I don't mean to say that as a joke, because that's, you know, Hey Buddy is the name of this podcast. So I guess another way to put it is would be like the best roommate. He's just no stress, so easygoing. Nothing's ever stressful. He's never worked up. He's the easiest person to live with. He's just such a good guy that way. And, you know, I could continue to live with him for a while. So thumbs up from me and Felix there. When you're in a foreign country, it's definitely nice to have someone else to live with. So obviously I don't speak German, neither did Felix. And it was fun for him to be here with me when we're just kind of getting settled in here, because when you're doing the simple tasks and it's just difficult, or you don't understand the culture or the language barrier, and you're trying to do the simple things and you're screwing up, like you're in the grocery store and you can't read the labels on your groceries, and so you just feel like a toddler. If you're living by yourself and you're doing it by yourself, you suddenly feel really lonely because you don't have anyone else to screw up with. But when you have another buddy there to feel like a toddler with and make mistakes of, you can just make fun of each other, and you can make fun of each other in public to other people, and they get it, and then it's fun. We thought it would be cool to have our own. We've been trying to find spices here to have, because, you know, we crave different kinds of food than what's typical here, and we've been trying to find spices and do like Mexican night, and we somehow managed to buy pizza breads instead of burrito or tortilla wraps. So you make little mistakes like that. But it's fun when you have someone else to share it with. Felix is also the only person in my entire life I have trained with on the bike. My entire career, my whole life riding bikes, I have always trained 100% by myself. There's like, I can't count them on one hand how many times I've trained with other guys, but it would only be at like training camps and races, and it's just like cruising. Felix and I were the we got to train together for a while, and we had a blast doing that, just smashing each other. We'd get in all kinds of stuff about coffee. I mean, I appreciate a good cup of coffee, but I appreciate a good cup of coffee, and I know a little bit about it, but I'm also the kind of guy where I like coffee because of what it lets me just get more done. So when it's 6 o'clock in the evening, Felix is grabbing a beer, I'm like, no, let's have a cup of coffee and then go for a hike or something like that. After we've been on the bike all day, I'm like, yeah, let's keep going. Coffee for me just lets me keep going. And I mean, there's all kinds of funny stories in here. One story we didn't get into was during this lockdown, Felix and I went for a ride. And I guess one of the regions here, Tyrol, here in Austria, was locked down. But the region that we were in, Vorarlberg, wasn't locked down. And so we went for a ride. And I guess we had crossed over the border at some point. We didn't know that. And we see some police officers standing on the side of the road, and they wave at us. And we think they're just being kind. And so we wave back. And for the last like hour or so of this ride, we'd been looking for somewhere to stop to fill up our bottles, just like a gas station or something like that. And we're getting really pissed at this point because everything's closed. And we're wondering, like, what the heck? Like, what's wrong with this place? Like, because we thought we were just exploring a cool new area. Turns out the police officers were not just waving to say hello, and they made us come over to them, and we're saying, hey, yeah, what's going on? And they very quickly realized we were not from around there. And they told us Tyrol is under lockdown, and it's a $2,000 fine for being outside. And we're like, oh, wow, okay, that's great. Where's Tyrol? That's great. And then they said, oh, you crossed the border 30 kilometers ago. It's a $2,000 fine, each of you. And we're looking at him like, are you kidding me? Like, Felix is thinking right away how he can just bail into the field to take off. And I'm looking at him almost laughing, being like, we don't have 2,000 euros. So I can give you my bicycle, or I can give you my shirt or something like that. But of course, they realized very quickly we weren't watching. We didn't get the Austrian news up in the barn and let us go. Another thing is a common question I ask on this podcast is for my English friends or North American friends, I guess, what's their favorite Euro English saying? And I never asked that to Felix, but one phrase that we made fun of a lot is, and maybe this will just be funnier for those that speak German, but whenever we go into a shop or something like that, or we're trying to ask something and we're trying to communicate in English, and whenever we ask, do you speak any English? They either say a little bit, and then they speak perfect English, or they actually only speak a little bit of English, and we're trying to communicate with them. And then after we get a couple sentences out, they just start going, genau, genau, genau. And genau, it means exactly. But the thing, we get really annoyed with it because we know what they're just trying to get us to get out of the shop at this point. They're just trying to get rid of us. They don't mean genau, they mean get out, because they're saying exactly. And we're just looking at them like, hey, don't you genau me. I haven't even finished telling you what it is yet. Don't go with your genauing. You don't even know what I haven't finished explaining it yet. But yeah, that's kind of our funny one there. We talk about so many different topics here. Everything from cars, sneakers. I mean, Felix is into sneakers. I'm more in a hiking boots, but he talks about that. Coffee, of course, what most people are going to be interested in. Just a whole mess of different topics. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you don't mind the more casual banter just between two buds. We just had a lot of fun recording this one, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay. That's the longest intro I've ever done, but I'll cut it there and leave the rest to Felix. All right, we're finally getting around to recording this podcast here, and man, I guess we've been living together for so long, it's probably just going to be more like a conversation than like an interview or a podcast
Two months later.
Yeah, really, eh? So, man, today's your last day. You've been here for 2 months, and now you're finally end of the road here.
Yeah, so it's been a bit gutted, actually, to head back home.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I'm going to miss riding. When I was up on the road on the hills earlier, I stopped and took a picture, and I was like, oh, this is going back to the flatlands of Italy is going to be pretty dull for training, but you know, it's going to be nice to see the family, see the missus, and you know, get back to that kind of Italian routine.
Yeah, for sure. You're gonna miss hanging out in the cabin in the forest with me.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Having a tractor in the living room. So man, I've been thinking, like, the easiest way to describe you, like the best analogy of I could give someone to you, is you're kind of like the son of Enzo Ferrari. I thought it'd be so funny being cool. Like,
who you are. So what is your family business?
So first of all, my parents started Rocket Espresso.
Yeah.
Which, who those who may not know Rocket Espresso, we manufacture domestic and commercial coffee machines out of Milan, Italy. So yeah, pretty much we're from New Zealand and we moved to Italy in 2007 to start Rocket off. I was only 10 years old at the time, so I was still a bit of a young gun. And then things have just kind of taken off, really, you know, in a pretty quick way.
Yeah, so that's the thing is, like, Rocket is like, I mean, if you're into coffee machines and stuff, that's like the biggest one. Like, you think of, like, if people that know Rocket or that know coffee machines would know, like, Rocket, La Marzocco.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. But, like, Rocket's, like, not that old of a company. Like,
yeah, so as I said, Rocket is, we started off in 2007, so.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty young. It's pretty young, yeah.
And was it ever the intention to, like, focus on cycling at all?
I don't think it was the intention, to tell the truth. But my father, being super passionate in cycling, and he's raced a bit all over the world when he's a bit of a young gun, I think some cyclist approached him and he found it cool, and then things took off pretty quickly. We did a limited edition Giro d'Italia machine for their 100 years, which sold pretty quickly. Then we did some stuff with Rafa clothing brands, and then, you know, as it goes, and one pro gets it, two pro get it, and the thing.
So it was more like the cycling industry kind of took Rocket in and blew it up, rather than you guys went to the cycling industry and pushed it?
To be fair, you approach big brands like Rafa, they're not gonna want to have much to do with unknown brands at the start. Yeah, so it was quite cool that, the brands, some cool brands have approached us. Like recently we've done a collab with Carhartt clothing. So that was really cool for Rocket, especially for me, but that's been one of my little joys of life, Carhartt. But yeah, also doing like limited machines for World Tour teams, or when they win the yellow jersey or the green jersey of the Tour de France. So yeah, kind of.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we approached cycling, and cycling approached us, and it took off together.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, like, I'm really skeptical of, like, marketing and stuff like that for brands. And, like, with Rocket, the idea is the fact that, like, if you were to make me an espresso with a Rocket versus any other coffee machine, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But I fully buy into the marketing, like, the
whole slogan. It will make you faster.
Yeah, having a Rocket espresso machine in your kitchen makes you faster.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, that is so cool. Like, for me, it's like there's very few brands that I buy into the marketing wholeheartedly, and like Rocket would be one, Lamborghini would be another. And like those are like sticks in the mud for me to measure, like, okay, you've made it when you finally have make it when you have an Aventador SV Roadster parked outside or something like that. Like those are cool things that I love. But I guess just to back up a little bit, so you're a Kiwi that now lives in Italy.
Yeah.
That you moved to Italy when you were 10?
Yeah, so both my parents born and raised in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather on my father's side immigrated to New Zealand after the war. So from Italy. Then, yeah, so I grew up in New Zealand, was a true little Kiwi, you could say. And then all of a sudden I got taken off my little island and put into full-on public Italian school where the teacher couldn't even say a word in English. And then I was kind of like, okay, this is a full immersion, gonna have to figure something out to make it work. So yeah,
cool. And so I mean, you're really comfortable in Europe, and but you're very much so Anglo-Saxon as well, which has made it super easy for us to live together. And
exactly.
We've been here for the last 2 months because we went to the first races in Croatia for the season. Those races got canceled and we just got out of there super quick as like all of Europe was getting locked down. And basically when the lockdown finally finished, you were here with me. Italy was the worst place
for it. Italy was terrible, so yeah.
And here it's been golden. Like, we've been able to ride outside all the time. It's been perfect for that.
Oh, yeah. We've been one of the only regions in this part of Europe that's actually can, let alone train, even just go outside for a walk, you know? So we've been pretty lucky.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, we have, like, won the lottery in the fact that we're allowed to train outside and stuff. But, and the thing is, like, it hasn't, because we've been allowed to train outside, that's the only thing that would really affect our lives. Like, we're pretty lucky all around. Like, cyclists,
without a doubt.
We live, like, when you go for a big training block, you live like a monk anyways. You're not, like, going out and socializing much. You're pretty much just eat, sleep, train anyways. And that's what we've been doing. And it's been pretty nice to just, I mean, we get along great. And yeah, so it's easy.
I think the Anglo-Saxon part of that's a big, big bonus for us.
Yeah.
Both having a good sense of humor.
Well, so there's another thing. We talked about this before as far as like just taking the piss out of each other. It's like we were saying, like, you know what? I can like give you a hard time and just telling you like, but you're being soft, like harden up or something like that. And you know I'm just taking the piss. Like, you know I'm joking around. But like when I've done that with some of my European teammates and stuff, I don't know if it's their culture. They don't do it as much. Or maybe it's like the lost in translation something.
Maybe
they, because they think I'm serious. And I remember like one time on my team last year, they were giving me a hard time about my helmet strap being too loose or something like that. And then I cursed and like, I was being sarcastic and just like stormed out of the camper and like slammed the door as like a joke, like being sarcastic. And they thought I was dead serious. And they're like, oh my God, he's finally cracked. He's finally snapped. And like, we're before the race and they're like coming up and like wanting to give me a hug and stuff. And I'm like, oh guys, come on.
Just,
like,
I'm just joking, boys.
Kidding. But anyways, that's really funny. Because just like pushing each other on. And the other thing is, out of my entire life racing bikes, you're the only person I've ever ridden with to train with. I never train with anybody. You're the only person I've ever gone training with. And like, I like being on my own and like having some alone time and just going off and riding by myself. But for me, and like, I know I'm the worst guy to train with because I'm like the what's the word I'm looking for? I'm the perfect half wheeler.
Yep.
Like I ride at the most uncomfortable pace. Like I just like riding at that really uncomfortable, like 280 to 320 watts
all day.
And then just boosting it a little bit more on the climbs. And so I know that no one likes riding with me that way. And I'm just like, well, I don't want to just ride slow on the flats all day and worry about half wheeling. But with you, it's great. Cause we got a full,
we've got a technique. We've got it all sorted now.
Well, it's great because it's, well, and the other things that, so I don't like having to just like ride around slow and being worried about like half wheeling people and stuff like that. And the other thing that drives me crazy is when you go riding with people, a lot of people are very much so on their schedule and stuff like that. And like, for me, I don't want another schedule. Like when I'm at races, I got to have a schedule and all this stuff. When I'm just training, it's like, I'd rather just spend my morning doing whatever I want. And then, you know, get on the bike whenever I want. I don't need another schedule. With us, it's like, okay, we're going to go, we'll plan that we're going to go for a ride the next day. And it'll be like, we'll come up with a time frame when we want to leave.
And we'll leave an hour later.
It's like a 1.5 hour window.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, okay, yeah, we're just kind of like keeping pace. Like, all right, he's making a coffee. All right, maybe I'll make some breakfast now. And okay, now I'll make a coffee. You know, we got our own pace that way.
No, I think that would makes it work. Otherwise, and after 2 months of someone's at the door waiting for an hour, I'd be just, I've lived with guys on my past team who would train together, and maybe with 4 or 5 guys going out and one guy's running 5-10 minutes late and he's just like, ah, fuck this, and off he goes and starts running by himself. It's like,
yeah.
So I mean, I think
there's no need to stress on the schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when we're on the bike, we got our whole system going. It's like, okay, you want to go a little harder on the flats, the other guy just gets in the wheel behind. Or if you want to take a pull, you're going a little too slow, then you know, you come around.
Yeah.
And so it's, you just hold whatever pace you want. There's no whining about like half wheeling doing this pace, because then you just end up doing the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, but then you don't even enjoy your, it's the second you start bitching and complaining about the problems about the day and thinking, oh, Jack's half wheeling or Felix is too slow on the hills or this and that, and then it just becomes not as enjoyable. I think
it's annoying. And then, so here's the other thing though, is so then whenever we get to the climbs, it's just do whatever pace you want.
Yeah.
And then you got to regroup at the top of the climb, and then, but the thing is, it's you either wait at the climb, but what you should really do, if you're the first one up the climb, then you flip it, roll back down to the other guy, and then ride up the rest of the climb together. That way the guy who's like hammering the climbs is not waiting at the top. And you know, you kind of slow down by the end of it, so when we're like 5 hours in and I'm completely done, like, because I've just been murdering myself for the first 5 hours and you're still talking like crazy, and just you're so Italian in the way where you can just talk. I talk a lot. Anyone that knows me, I talk a lot. I have a story for everything. And you, dude, you can talk my ear off sometimes. Like, we're 5 hours in the ride, I'm completely cracked, and you're just bah, 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 and talking on the phone, and you're just, I'm just like, Jesus, this guy is so Italian. I can't do this. I'm like, bro, I'm cracked. I need my jaw muscles to work for breathing and chewing right now. And you're just still talking to me. I'm like, oh God, I can't do this. That's pretty funny. We got our own system, so I've really enjoyed riding with you.
Cause well, we've made it work, that's for sure. We've done a few Ks and a few climbs together in the last 2 months, that's for sure.
Well, man, that's the other thing is like, so we've come up with, you know, been getting these big old school maps, like just the old road maps you get from like the gas station, whatever. And we've got them all over our kitchen now. So we have one. So we were covering our walls in maps now instead of like Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition posters. You got maps on the Dude Ranch walls. And so we have one of all of Austria and now one of all of Switzerland.
Yeah.
And the one of Switzerland just went up like a day or two ago because we banged off most of what pretty we can get Austria, in Austria.
Yeah, West Austria.
Borders are locked down, so we have to stay in Austria, even though we're right on the borders with Germany and Switzerland.
Unfortunately, yeah.
And so we've just been like going on all the different cycling apps, whether it's Strava, Komoot, anything like that, finding all the biggest passes, highlighting them with a Sharpie on our wall and being like, okay, we got to knock this one off. We got to get this one done. And we've pretty much knocked off all the big ones around us in Austria.
Especially, well, when did you went to Tyrol? Probably a week and a half, 2 weeks before me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in Vorarlberg, we've knocked off, I think, as our boss, Thomas, sent me an email or on the phone. I can't remember. He said something about, oh, Felix and Jack has done almost more roads than the locals around here. And even the locals, maybe they see on your Instagram or my Strava or something. They're saying to Thomas, like, these guys have done everything. They've ridden everything. So now we're expanding. We're checking out the new areas. So we've clocked off quite a good chunk of Tyrol now.
That's the point. It's like our local teammates are sending me messages on Instagram being like, what climb is this? Yeah, exactly. And we're like, oh, it's over in Tyrol. It's like, oh, you guys are nuts. You're like,
they've lived forever there 20 plus years. We've been here 2 months. And
well, it's funny because now we're trying to think of it like, okay, this border to Switzerland's got to open up or we're going to be like sneaking across the border and stuff. And of course, we're the idiot foreigners that are just used to, the rules being pretty gentle and whatnot and not so rude. Be like, we can break the rules and bend the rules. This is probably one we shouldn't bend. Yeah, but, you know, well,
I think we're getting a bit of trouble for that one.
Like, we've been thinking like we're getting so desperate. We're just looking at all these beautiful passes in Switzerland. We're just like, could we maybe sneak across the border? Like, could we talk? If we get caught, could we talk our way out of this one? Like, what if we put on like some garbage bags or something and so it's like camouflage in the night? Like, could we do it? Like, you think they have border guards there or is it just like a gate? You know, I think we can get around it, but you know, maybe we'll not push our luck with that one. I don't want to end up in prison. You're like, oh, sorry, not from around here. Don't speak the language. But okay, so back to coffee, I guess. What, you are the coffee expert, and when I found out that, so I messaged you like way before we met, like back in the fall. I
November,
messaged
November, October, or something.
Yeah, because I just was looking at the nationalities from our team. Like, oh, a Kiwi. Okay, I'm like perfect Anglo-Saxon. I'm gonna like hit up him. And then at least have, he'll speak English
for sure.
And then I was looking at your Instagram page and I'm seeing like photos of like the Rocket espresso machine. I'm like, okay, I guess this guy's kind of in like coffee machine. Yeah. I message you and you're like, oh yeah, family's Rocket. I'm like, what? That's sick. So, and then when I found out I was going to be living with you for a while, I'm like, this is great. I'm going to get like the ultimate crash course in coffee. Like I am getting to live with the coffee expert. And one thing I'll say about you that's really cool that I admire a lot about coffee is I've had plenty of teammates over the years that are really into coffee and they'll just stick their nose up at any coffee that they think is not perfect and they'll just be really snobby about it. Versus you'll drink coffee that's like not disgusting, but like subpar coffee and not be like upset about it. Be like, okay, I have an appreciation for the really good stuff.
Exactly.
And you know the really good stuff, but you're not sticking your nose up about it, which is super cool, which I love. So what are your three, you know, best tips for making a good cup of coffee?
So I reckon, first of all, as just jumping back a step, as you're referring to coffee experts, you could say, like, so I roast a bit of coffee off to the side, which has certainly given me a much bigger appreciation for coffee in general, and obviously understanding simply 50 seconds more to a minute, if more or less at 5-10 degrees more, what outcome it will give to your bean. So there are way more people in the world who do cupping and taste 1,000 different types of coffee and very technical. As you said, I actually do still appreciate, if we've been here for 2 months and we can't get the cream of the cream coffee bean. We've still got some pretty good coffee, mm-hmm. and we're doing it on the stove pot, and I'm drinking one right now. It's like, I'd kill for something like this instead of going 2 months without coffee. So yeah, jumping back to your question, sorry. I think the most important thing when you're making coffee, if it's espresso, if it's an AeroPress or a filter coffee or whatever someone fancies, is knowing what you're doing. So you could, in my opinion, you could have the best coffee machine in the world, the best coffee beans in the world, but if you don't know how to make coffee
with that machine,
yeah, it's gonna be, so yeah, I'm talking like espresso, for example,
right?
So
just knowing how to use whatever tool you got.
Someone could be using a really average bean and have a way better outcome than you may be using the best bean in the world, but you don't know what you're doing.
Okay.
You know, so that's number one for sure, hands down, is knowing how to make a good espresso.
And on whatever machine you're using.
Yeah, on whatever machine. And all espresso machines are 99%.
Well, when I say machine, I mean like I'm including like AeroPress, filter coffee, whatever.
Know what you're doing, Know what you're doing. Like you and I have made some coffees together. It's pretty simple. Like you've got to play around with your grind setting,
mm-hmm.
quite a lot. And once that's sorted, it's like a religious procedure of what you have to do to make the perfect espresso. You've just got to be a machine and like keep on doing it the same way. So for sure, your ability. Number two would be,
so knowing how to use the tools you got, whatever whatever machine you're going to use, whether it's the AeroPress, Rocket, whatever.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
knowing
what you're doing.
Second would be grind size.
So knowing how to, you could almost put that into number one, like knowing what you're doing.
Okay.
Because if you don't know how to set up the grind size, even for like the AeroPress,
yeah.
How you and I are making the stovetop, and we've got the grind. You do it yourself. You set up the grind perfectly mm-hmm. for it. Like if the grind was terrible, we'd be pretty messed up with the coffee, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So number two would be your product.
So like the beans?
Yeah.
Okay.
Without a doubt. Like obviously it's like going to a restaurant and having a steak. It's like if you have a really good steak, it's still gonna taste better than going to like an average place and eating a shitty old piece of meat, you know what I mean?
Sure. So
that's certainly and there's plenty, there are thousands. If you and I have been speaking about like cities that have had big coffee industry booms around, especially Europe and the world, it's like to find good specialty coffee nowadays is pretty easy.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've got your technique, your quality, and then yeah, number three, I mean, obviously if you're using an espresso machine, you're going to want your machine to be decent machine would always, is obviously always going to help. Having the machine clean, or you know, having everything, just yeah, it's kind of more those main two, knowing what you're doing, so keeping on top of all those steps.
Okay. And so you got a Rocket at home, so like if you have the money to buy a proper machine, you know, you get a Rocket, but what's your if what you use to either travel with, or if you don't if someone doesn't have the money for like a full-on nice espresso machine, what are you using? AeroPress, pour over, Chemex, V60, Mocha Pot, what French press? What
I fancy a lot myself is AeroPress. I'm a big AeroPress fan.
Okay.
Because I think, well, first of all, if I can choose hands down, it's gonna be a double espresso. I do fancy a flat white, but I'm a double espresso, 100-0. You know what I mean? Then my kind of like soft spot is AeroPress. Okay. I find it like, well, now we're drinking stovetop mocha, which is a bit thicker than an AeroPress, but I like that kind of, I think the what you could say, the context, the texture,
okay,
the texture sure. of the liquid, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I really like the AeroPress for that. It's super, you can take it wherever you want. It's super quick to make. It's super easy, you know, and you can always even play around with different styles, which you could call recipes with the AeroPress, and kind of, you know, get different outcomes with your cup of coffee.
Cool. All right, that's pretty good. And then, I mean, so you've already mentioned, you've already kind of branched out in the coffee industry. You've you roast your own beans. You've started your own coffee company. You sell your own. You are your own company.
Yeah. So, geez, when did that start?
Just hustling on the side. You got your own business going already.
Yeah, just probably about coffee. 2.5 to 3 years ago now.
That's cool. What's the name of the brand?
It's called Salvavita, which in English translates to lifesaver. But lifesaver in English wouldn't give the value. So it's kind of funny this, because if an English speaker hears Salvavita, or anyone who doesn't speak Italian, that gets like, oh, that's a cool Italian coffee name.
Yeah, of course.
But if an Italian hears it, it's like, oh, what are my mates back in Italy? Why did you call it Salvavita? Like, what's so... yeah, so what happened is I've always wanted I've grown up around coffee. My old man back in New Zealand had a roastery.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since I've been like 7, 8 years old, I've been seeing coffee roasted, etc. So it's something I've always wanted to learn about. And then, yeah, the opportunity came up over here in Italy to get a used roaster. I roast on a 1970s Victoria. Which is like an old school roaster. So no new school technical pressure profiling. Sorry, that's not like there's a thing called Cropster.
Okay.
So lots of people would use Cropster, which is like a graph.
Okay.
That as you're roasting your coffee, it will kind of like give you a very indication of what's going on with your roasting.
Yeah.
So my old man was kind of like, okay, if you're going to learn how to roast coffee, it's going to be like learning how to drive a car. You're not going to learn on a Formula One car. You're going to learn on the little old go-kart.
Okay.
Which is great. The first time I almost set the building to fire. Still trying to learn what I did a few years ago, doing what I was doing a few years ago. But then it's great. You get the hang of it. I can play around with the heat manually, and it's completely taught me how coffee really works.
And just like, I have no idea what this is. So how much does one of these roasters cost, like ballpark?
If you wanted to get a new roaster, there's a brand called Probat. Probably like 50-60 grand.
$50,000-$60,000.
Yeah, for a good coffee roaster. Yeah, so we're talking like a car. Maybe you could get something for a little less, but obviously if you're trying to roast quantity, you want something.
So like something that you would have had to buy would be around that much money, or even buying it used, still looking at like at least 20 grand.
So yeah, I'm shortly wanting to get further on as a modern roaster.
Okay.
Because now I know how to do it old school.
Yeah.
So I'd like to probably get into the new school being a young guy. But yeah, so I've got a...
It's a huge investment.
It's like some places will buy a space and set up to do like a cafe.
Yeah.
That's your investment. For a roastery, it's your roaster, obviously, you know?
Okay. And then how big is it? It fills a room.
So it'd be half the size of a modern Fiat 500, if anyone knows.
Half the size of
modern Fiat 500, yeah.
Like a VW Golf?
Smaller. It's like, it's probably going to be 1 meter to 1.5 meters wide, couple meters tall, and about a couple meters like in length.
It's like a coffee table width and height?
Yeah. Like height, okay. But 2 meters tall.
Okay. All right.
So like, say 1.5 by 2 high by 1.5 to 2 long.
Okay.
So it's a big beast.
It's not something you can put in your bedroom.
No, exactly. You wouldn't want to, because the thing goes up to 200 plus degrees.
So and does it take a lot of, like, is it an expensive electricity bill as well?
So it runs on gas.
Is it an expensive gas bill?
It's all like proportioned, you could say.
Like, is there a running cost to it as well?
Yeah, well, kind of like you as referring to owning a cafe, you turn on the lights every day.
I mean, like a noticeable one, like bigger than.
No, not overly, because it's like running, you know, cooking your dinner on the stove. Like you turn the roaster on, you whack it on full gas, and it's literally a flamethrower. Get 200 plus degrees until everything's warm and you put the coffee in. So it's something you certainly wouldn't want as your bedroom, as a joke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It gets pretty bloody hot.
Okay. And then, so that's what you're doing right now, and that's super cool. That's like a really cool passion and something that you, a skill, like a unique skill, and you were able to kind of learn that through your family, I guess. Do you have any interest of like going into the family business at any point? Like even after the cycling career, would you ever want to work at Rocket Espresso?
So I've thought about this many times. It's actually a question quite a few people have asked me.
Okay.
I love Rocket as a brand, super like lots of respect to what my parents have done with it. But personally, me, no.
Okay.
Because I never see myself sitting in an office.
Okay.
It's something that it doesn't even fancy me the slightest.
Not even if you could just sit in an office for like 5 minutes, tell everyone else what to do, and then get on your bike and go for a ride.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think if I jumped into Rocket, it'd be that easy.
Yeah, guys, just send me the check at the end of the month.
Yeah, exactly. No, so maybe something in the future to do with the brand could be interesting, but certainly not. I'll never see myself, now I'm 23 years old, so maybe in 10 years my mind will change, but as of now and as it's been for the last quite a few years of my life, office job probably wouldn't fancy me much.
Okay. But you have thought of what you kind of want to do after, or like kind of you're already going down?
I've got a few ideas. So obviously, well, we're both trying to make a career in cycling.
Yeah.
So that's obviously on the top of the food chain, you could say. Then Salva Vita, so the roastery is kind of number two for me.
Mm-hmm.
Something I'm just, as we were saying earlier, trying to develop without full-time dedication, because then you're taking time away from cycling. But
of course, yeah.
That's going off quite nicely. And I've got a bit of a soft spot for craft beer, as you know.
Yeah, you've got me back on IPAs.
Yeah, so that's something. So I'd certainly like to do something also with beer in a future, without a doubt, without a doubt.
So having your own brewery.
Yeah, so I'd love to have a good Anglo-Saxon style cafe over in Italy where you can rock up, sit down, have a good espresso or flat white or whatever you fancy, and have avocado on toast, you know?
Okay.
Because living in Italy, you've seen what it's like here. It's very hard to get... Italy's very typical with their food.
Yeah.
But now they're slowly starting to understand that, you know, avocado on toast or bagels or this kind of stuff, breakfast bagels, is good, it tastes good, and it's different, and people going, oh, like they've found America, you know, they've found something so new. And so I'd really like to link in a bit of a passion for good food and good coffee into that sector. And and then on something else would be, I'd love to learn how to brew beer.
And would you like serve beer at night? Would it be like you're probably serving coffee and breakfast stuff, kind of like a cafe stop in the morning and beer at night?
Or if I had the possibility.
Or would you keep them separate?
I'd do them separate, exactly, yeah. Okay. So I'd maybe have, like, the cafe.
And a restaurant?
Then no, not even a restaurant, just like a cafe.
Just a tap room.
Yeah, and then a tap room.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so two different activities.
Okay, sweet, man, that's awesome. That's super cool stuff. So, you know, you're really not the best person to ask for advice on how to ride in shitty weather, because you're really soft and you've just been spoiled rotten your whole life and just riding in like the best places.
Yeah,
I've been in Girona and then I'm in Italy.
I do like the warmth.
You don't
like
know what snow is. You don't know any of that. So instead of asking you how to dress for the warm or anything like that, where's the best place to go ride? Where's the best place to ride in the world?
That's actually a really hard question. I'd say the place that, as a cyclist, gives me more joy will be Girona, hands down.
Okay.
Because I bloody love the roads there.
Mm-hmm.
It is warm, so it's not like back in New Zealand we've got crosswinds and rain, which is pretty grim.
Yeah.
For sure, Girona. Also, like, off the bike, you've got an Anglo-Saxon culture.
Mm-hmm.
But I could be saying this just because I've been riding in Italy for so many years and I find it so different. Okay. Like, I've loved riding here in the mountains. I'm not a climber, but I get my ass up them and I really enjoy it, you know? So, but nothing taking away from northern Lombardy, Italy, where it's pretty much where I've grown up, which I do, very beautiful. Okay. But at this point in time, if I had to answer that question, I'd say Girona.
Okay. And does that answer change? Let's say you just got to live like a monk for a month. You're going into like some huge race. Let's say you're getting ready to go to race the tour. and you're going to be one of the leaders. You just got to be in the shape of your life, and you got to live like a monk, make all the sacrifices for a month. Would you still go to Drona? Is there a different place you'd go to? Like, if you just got to only focus on the training, doesn't worry about the lifestyle.
I'd probably still go to, at this point in time, I'd go to Drona, because you've got, you can ride 150, 160 Ks and you're in Andorra. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you could move up there for 4 or 5 days or do a bit of altitude and you're in the mountains, in the Pure Mountains. From Girona, you ride 30 to 40 Ks east and you're on the Costa Brava. Mm-hmm. So, like, beautiful warmth, rolling terrain. I think the thing that Girona is, it offers a bit of everything.
Okay.
In comparison to where we are now, where... You've got mountains. End of story, you know?
Like, this is quite ridiculous. So if you look over the training for the last little bit.
Yeah, exactly. On
even my rest, like even a rest day here, unless like without doing like just an out and back, super boring along the river, like without going extreme, you're guaranteed even on a rest day, 1,000 meters elevation.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah, I agree.
Like so just like to categorize our training days here, you have a rest day, minimum 1,000 meters of elevation
climbing,
gain
in
just like an hour or two. And then for like our big days and whatnot, every time we've gone out for a big day, we've been over 4,000 meters of climbing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The smallest one was like 41. And what we did 2 days ago was 5,600.
So what do you think? It's like, I reckon when you tick over between the fourth and fifth hour, you're going from 3,500 to 4,000. And then it just goes boom.
Yeah.
Goes up. Yeah.
There's just nothing but climbing here. And it's awesome. I love it.
You love it. Oh, I'm not sure about it yet.
You're getting a good dose of it.
Yeah, full immersion.
And then, so you kind of mentioned this already, going off on a different tangent now. Like favorite brands and stuff like that. As far, it doesn't have to be something you own a lot of, but just like a brand where you feel good about like giving them your hard-earned money.
Okay.
Or products you love.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Carhartt.
I love that because Ian Boswell said the same thing.
Yeah, you mentioned, which is, and someone might say, oh, well, something to do with cycling. And it's got nothing to do with cycling, does it? It's
no,
like,
not at all.
And
I was making fun of you so much when I saw Carhartt as well, because like I have a pair of Carhartts that I use for like working with the chainsaw or working on my truck or like using them as like work clothes and like construction.
No, but
and my brother is an electrician and he has Carhartts and they're just beat to shit as well because he's just in ditches and actually using them as workwear. And then I see you rocking up in Croatia wearing everything car and I'm looking like Mr. Hipster and I'm like, who's this Captain Hip Hop?
I don't know if it's Italy or if it's just like my group of mates. We grew up and like obviously living in Italy, you kind of, when you go out in the afternoon and the evening, it's not like maybe what I could do in New Zealand, whack on a pair of jandal flip flops, you know, some shorty.
You call them flip flops, not thongs.
No, I don't call them thongs.
Every other Aussie calls them thongs.
That could be maybe my from the British school.
Flip flops is what they're called, not thongs. And I was like, what the hell are you guys talking about? You got your thongs.
Yeah, flip flop. I call them flip flops.
Yeah, flip flops.
Or jandals.
What's a jandal?
Jandal, same thing. Flip flops.
Is it a brand?
Jandals. Like, we talk like flip flop.
But what is jandal?
I think it could be. That could be a Kiwi thing.
Okay.
I'm not sure if any Kiwis out there, let us know because I have no idea.
All right.
Sidetrack. So yeah, we're talking about so New Zealand, it's a lot more relaxed. Also coming from Wellington, it's a bit of a beach style. Then you go to Italy, then obviously even the little 5-year-old boy is going out for an evening stroll with his parents, looking very, very smart and suave. So,
oh yeah, you're saying we're in Croatia, like, man, because I was blown away that we saw a little kid in the Montclair furry coat. It's like 5 years old. You're like, yeah, they're flexing from a young age, man.
Yeah, so that's so not that. Yeah, so I think that's probably why we all got into Carhartt, because we were still young and.
But is Carhartt big in Italy?
It's pretty big. I think there's
like designer clothes.
Yeah, so now they've kind of sidetracked a bit from the working style and gotten into like making things a bit like more, you know, a bit more streetwear, you could say.
Sure, which I find super strange because like in my town, it's a logging redneck town. Everybody wears Carhartts, but it's because they're loggers whatnot.
Working brand. So even with Carhartt, if wearing the brand for the last 5-6 years, I have noticed in... the like designs and the way the materials they use and kind of in the streetwear zone, like part of the brand.
So if you're going out in Italy and you're trying to look cool in the evening, Carhartt's like a designer brand to wear?
No, it's more like it's like a casual streetwear. You know, it's like...
It's like wearing like Jordans, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. You'd wear your Carhartt stuff with your Jordans. Exactly. That's a great comparison. Then if you want to... Being Italy being a bit of a fashion, Milan being 30Ks down the road, people do like to dress very smart. So then obviously that's just a complete different ballgame. You're not...
Italy, though, that's like the mecca for that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like if you go out to a nice dinner or a nice... event or something, you're not rocking up in your Carhartts and your Jordans. For sure. Yeah.
Okay. Any other brands? Carhartt's one that stands out?
Carhartt's one. I have a very big soft spot for cars, for engines, as like you and I have spoken about. Like a child dream to own a Lamborghini one day or something like that. But
which Lambo? Money's no object.
I'd go old school. I'd go for a Lambo Miura. Jack and I get lost when we're driving back in the cars. We just get lost in these conversations about what we'd love to have in our lives. Yeah.
Well, because I was telling you, for the first time in my life, like I've been to car shows and I've seen like some really cool stuff, Bugattis, all that kind of stuff. The other day, what drove by me going the other way was a red Lamborghini Countach.
I remember you mentioning, I lit up when I saw
that thing. I was like, the only time I've ever seen that is in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I wanted to start chasing it off, flip it and start chasing on my bike just to get a photo of the thing. Because it just blew me away.
Yeah.
That was the coolest car I've ever seen in person.
Also around here, could be because we're so close to Switzerland.
Maybe, yeah.
There on a Sunday, you do see some nice cars rolling around, that's for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's like the dream car to have?
So, yeah. Oh.
A Miura.
Yeah, probably a Miura, but that's like the creme of the creme of the creme, so I'm pretty realistic in my life. That's probably a no-go.
Sure. See, for me, I've panned it out. I want a yellow with black accents Aventador SV Roadster. That's my dream car. It's
something fast would be nice as well.
Outrageous. Yeah, of course. I've come around to the idea of like Teslas being cool. Like when they first came out, I know they're never going to be a driver's car. But just the idea, the fact that you can drive like a lunatic and go so stupid fast for free.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're not paying for gas. Ever. And I mean, of course, if you're going to buy a Lambo, you don't care about money
at that point.
But as like a convenient daily driver, to have something that's convenient, like you're not really going to go get milk and cookies with the Lambo, but you know, to be able to do it in like the mom van Tesla and still blow the doors off 90% of the cars on the road, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. But I would fancy a Porsche. Well, cars in general.
You like Porsche? Which one?
Yeah, a 911 or something.
More specific, like a GT2? 918?
Maybe something a bit more like elegant. Because if I could
GT3?
It's two still, like a Carrera, like the new 911 Carrera or something. Something a bit more suave, a bit more, you know, I could rock up.
45-year-old mom, kids in the back.
Nah, it's a Carrera. Screw that. get it into a bright orange, you know.
Okay.
A big F off to everyone. Yeah, but... for sure I'd love to own a great car, but I think that's most dudes deep down in their heart, every guy wants to own a beautiful car at some point in their life, you know.
Sure. And you know, for me it's always been cars, but the eccentric toy I'd want before having a Lambo is a little Cessna plane. Like ever since my buddy took one up.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Like just it's something that no one's really familiar with, but I have a buddy back home that took me up in his and whatnot, and just like asking him questions about like how much these things cost to run. And it's like having one of those and owning it and running it and everything like that is about the same price as owning like, or even a little bit less than owning like a really nice sports car, but nothing insane. Like owning like a Porsche Turbo would be more expensive than owning one of these Cessna planes. And just the fact that you can go fly over the mountains, land wherever you want, go land on a frozen lake if you got skis on it, land on a lake with floats, like that's just such a cool experience.
A bit more freedom than having to follow Yeah, follow the, especially the speed limits over here. Just fly over them, yeah, instead of having to cruise around in the car, that's for sure.
Yeah, I gotta say, we don't have these speed cameras back home, and this is really cracking me here, the fact that you have all these speed cameras.
We know where everything is now, though. We know where they all are.
Yeah. You know, another thing we've talked about that, like, I personally love about this area is the attitude people have towards the mountains here. And, like, the big one has been, like, the word service that they say.
Yeah, everyone.
They say it just like hello. It's like a greeting everybody around here knows. And I couldn't figure it out when they were kept saying it to me. At first, like, I was at the gym, and one time I was in the sauna. And, you know, last year when I learned in Europe they don't wear any clothes when you go in the sauna, mm-hmm. versus in North America, you go into a sauna without any clothes on, and it's a...
you're gonna unisex, get arrested.
You'll get arrested. Here, you get kicked out of the place if you do wear more than a towel. And they're saying service to me, and I'm like, the hell with it? Yeah, did I do something wrong or something? Like, what the hell? And then they're saying it to me on the bike, and I finally clued into what it is. And it's so cool that the attitude for people here, the way I describe it, is you don't have people that are road cyclists or skiers, or they don't put themselves into categories. They do all of those things, and they don't categorize themselves as I'm a road cyclist, I'm a mountain biker. They're just people that love being outside.
Yeah, exactly, I agree.
And there's no road cyclists here, or there is, but the way you see it is we see so many people out doing these same passes, these same roads we're doing, and they're doing them on like hardtail mountain bikes,
yeah, exactly.
with big camping backpacks on. And we're just like, what the, like, okay, they're going slower up the mountain, but they're still doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you would not see anybody in North America or a lot of places in the world huffing it up these massive passes, or even little kids. Like, five-year-old kids going to grandma's house, going over these massive passes on mountain bikes. And we're just like, right on, dude. Like, that's amazing.
But I think, I don't know if I told you, I'm sure I've told you this at some point over the last 2 months, is... the amount, as you're saying, the amount of people that get outside here,
it's crazy.
Just general for a walk or a ride or a hike or in the afternoon, especially in the weekends, you're riding on the bike, you see hundreds of people just doing like physical activity, just something.
Everybody out here does.
Never seen that anywhere else in the world to this extent.
Everyone. And so that's what I like, is because actually where I come from in Squamish, it's very much the same, where you have everybody is out exercising all the time. Doesn't matter if you're 5 years old or 80 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. That's
cool. What's really cool here is just the attitude of just everybody is just passionate about being outside, and they have this word service or whatever. And that's what I love about it, is it's just sharing and being stoked on other people being out there.
Yeah, so enjoying
it. People, you know, you see people using backpacks instead of, you know, handlebar bags. Like, oh, you got to have a handlebar bag on your bike. Where they're using, they don't care about a gravel bike. They don't know what a gravel bike is. They're just going to use a mountain bike to go over these passes. And then they're not going on like a ride. They're going touring on their bike. And they're not looking on Strava for segments. They're looking at like passes on these big old school maps and seeing how they could do like a tour around, because they don't care about their time
or
power,
how fast they're going,
watts, anything
like that.
They
just go to enjoy it. Exactly.
Like, to them, the bicycle is just a tool that they can use to go explore the mountains and move around the mountains, just like their skis or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. In the winter,
And that's what's so cool. That's what I really love about just the attitude people have around here with that. And so, I mean, you've been stuck here for 2 months with me, and you didn't plan on being here that long. And so do you have any like unique items that you travel with to like give you a sense of home? Like, for me, it's different because I leave for like 9 months, so I gotta bring like a candle that smells like maple syrup, or like a coffee mug from home
to fill the memory.
Is there any weird things you travel with?
Well, considering this time here, as we were racing in Croatia, I was meant to be there for just over a week, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't even need my laptop.
Sure.
And then two months later, I'm over here. So,
if you knew you were going to be spending 2 months here,
like when I go away on a training camp for something for a month or who knows what, sense of home
or just anything
weird.
I'll
bring
that you
my AeroPress. Which I don't have with me, because I was like, oh, I'm going to be in a hotel. It's a week, you know.
That's still pretty standard. A lot of guys travel with an AeroPress.
Yeah, exactly. Laptops, which everyone travels with, apart from me being stupid and forgetting it this time. Actually, here we go. Is normally when I go away, I'm a bit of... So that third brand that I never gave you, which popped to mind, would be Nike. I'm a big shoe boy. bit of collector sneakers going on back home. And as Jack and I always have been getting a, well, you and I have been getting a giggle out of in the last 2 months, I'm here with my team shoes.
So which I don't have destroyed.
Yeah. So the team pre-race shoes, which I've been wearing for the last 2 months to go to the supermarket or to go for a walk on the forest.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd certainly when I go somewhere, I'd bring, even my missus will go away on holiday and she'll have all her clothes and I'll have few clothes, but then I'll be bringing three or four pairs of sneakers because that's like my must. I need that freshness on the feet.
Okay. And it's Nikes?
Yeah, Nike. Right? Big Nike boy. Big Nike boy.
Is there a favorite pair of Nikes you like? Specific ones? Jordan's, Air
Jordan,
Max.
Jordan 1s. I've got a few of them back home.
Okay.
Are you aware of Off-White? There's a sneaker collab.
I don't know any of this stuff. I know like trail running shoes. Okay, there we go. Hiking boots.
There's like these things with this designer and he does a brand who's done Off-White. I think he's like the designer for Louis Vuitton or something now. I don't know. Anyway, and he did this collab with Nike and it just went crazy. And I was extremely lucky to able to get my hands on, what is it? Three pairs of them out of the 10, which now the
must be worth a ton of money now.
Oh yeah, they're worth like a grand plus.
Each. That's sick, dude.
So for example, the Jordan 1s of
how'd you get that?
Just off like a Nike app they released and all my mates were like, oh, let's give it a go because they're cool looking sneakers.
Sure.
And they were the price of going down to Foot Locker and spending a normal amount of on a pair of Nikes.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, fuck it, why not? And I got my hand on three pairs. My mate's just like, dude, how lucky. Like some of the not a pair that I have, but the Jordan 1 Off-Whites go for, I don't want to be too wrong, but like $2,000 or something, mate. And our size. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's crazy. For a pair of shoes.
Oh, yeah, man. It's crazy. Afterwards, we'll whack it up on there's some online shops that,
I got some flip flops I got to show you, man.
So yeah,
that's
so
crazy.
So sneakers are, I'd never spend that money on them, but I mean, geez, if I can enjoy, let's say when I put on a nice, fresh, clean, sneakers always have to be clean.
Sure.
Clean pair of sneakers, I'm like, it's something that does give me joy.
Okay, so we're different there because I just use and I love gear and stuff, but I use and abuse it.
Okay, yeah.
I'm just like, yep, I'm just going to, I know I'm going to beat this into the ground.
Complete opposite.
And like I always buy like trail running shoes. And then when I've kind of burned out the tread from like hiking and running and trail running and stuff like that to the point where they don't have enough grip anymore, then they just get used as like my daily shoes. And then eventually when I come up with another pair of that, I'll like cut the backs off the shoes and then turn them into like almost like slides, like cool flip flops. There's like the shoes I have right now, I've had for like, the shoes I wear every day now, I've had for 7 years, I think.
Jesus.
Now, so like,
but I think also it's different, like, you're from the forest, the mountains, the coast, like you're from
just
wilderness.
Snowmobiles, we don't have cars or anything like that. We just live in the woods, ride moose around.
I think go for an evening spin on your moose. So,
I just come from the mountains. Yeah, we don't have cities or anything there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a big
going Vancouver back is actually just like a tribal region in Toronto.
I'd love to go to Canada. I'd love to go.
It's pretty cool. Pretty sweet there. And you know, I've told you this so many times because this just doesn't drive me crazy. It's just something I cannot believe here is I have never seen a nation or just people so excited about firewood.
Oh my god.
Everybody here has 10 years worth of firewood. Yeah. They make everything out of firewood. I like the sound of the Alps here. It's like cowbells, streams, and chainsaws.
Yeah.
Five-year-olds
running around with chainsaws that we see on the bike at times.
That's the thing is like people are talking about how you can't go out on the bike in some of these regions because if you fall and crash and you end up in a hospital.
Yeah, no ambulances.
No ambulances. And then we're going out for a ride here. It's like these kids aren't in school. And so we're on the bike that wound up. That kid was 4 feet tall and swinging a chainsaw 3.5 feet long.
Yeah, exactly.
He should not be doing
it
that.
It's great to and see them, isn't it?
It's awesome that these kids are out playing, but it's like he's in more danger than me riding my bike.
Exactly,
like that kid should not be carrying that chainsaw. And then the other kids are like 8 and 9 years old. They're swinging the axes, working on the mill and stuff here because everyone's got a mill and firewood. And like I swear, we have fidget spinners like when we're bored and whatnot, and we just have like an itch to scratch or something, we have fidget spinners. They have log splitters.
Yeah.
It's like they don't know what to do, so they're just going to start chopping firewood.
Oh, but it's all great. I think it's great.
It's great, but it's like they're preparing for the apocalypse, and instead of, you know, getting the cans of corn and beans all together, yeah, or toilet paper, however everyone else has been hoarding.
The world could freeze over, and
they got firewood chopped and ready.
If the world freezes over, escape to Austria. You well, won't freeze to death, that's for sure.
You might starve to death, but at least you'll have a warm fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's so funny. That I thought
it's,
was really
it's quite
good.
Impressive. Mm-hmm. And the way they stack it, I love.
Yeah, and I mean, they're very methodical about that. With yeah. Like, it's got to be perfect 1 meter lengths of wood and how they stack it. Everyone does it the exact same. That's pretty funny that way. Okay, so just some more general questions here. Who comes to mind when you think of the word successful? Or any idols? Anyone's changed over the years?
So when I was a young boy, like young as in 8, 9 years old, I was soccer, as you'd say in America, I'd call it football. Soccer crazy. And I was big as probably 90% of the young boys back in the day, David Beckham fan.
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously growing up, got into cycling. Huge Philippe Gilbert fan.
Okay.
Now I'd say if I had to have a sporting idol, probably be Matthew Vanderpool.
Okay.
Which is probably most people who know cycling could agree with. But life-wise, it probably sounds a bit, not corny, but probably be my old man.
Nice.
Because I'm super respectful for what he's achieved with my mother, with the business, and hasn't probably been easy for them moving across the world. Mm-hmm. Someone would say, oh, 1,000 adults move across the world. It's like, okay, yeah, very true, very true. Italians don't really speak English, as in the Austrians know English.
Mm-hmm.
The Italians don't. So leaving friends, family, well, there's the three of us, you know, when we're back home, but leaving friends pretty much for work.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's obviously pretty hard at a certain age when you're 50 years old, just over 50, to pick up a completely foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
So super respect to them. And also my father and I have had a bit with my uncle, so his brother, a hashtag called hashtag BTMFD, which is break the motherfucker down.
Okay.
And it's pretty much just like harden up, you know. So you rip the piss out of me for bitching and complaining all day long, which is true. I do. But I think one thing that's it's kind of started as a joke, like BTMFD here, there. But like when it comes down to, not only in sport, I think in life in general, when it gets to that kind of cutting point that you're like, oh, you're going to make it or you're going to crack, you know?
Yeah.
That's something. So it kind of taught me to become a bit of a hard bastard.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, probably something like that.
That's awesome, man. And I really respect and really love the relationship you have with your dad, because you'll be talking on the phone and I don't know if you're talking on your phone to your dad or like just one of your mates.
Yeah.
Like the way you
guys
just
both bro. So
yeah, bro, you call your dad like bro or dude or whatever. I'm just like, man, that's cool. Like that's pretty sweet. That's awesome that you have that. And then, so we kind of talked on this a little bit. Favorite beverage, I think that'd be cool. So it can be, what's your go-to? Jesus. So it can be coffee, beer, fruit juice,
okay,
kombucha.
Are we talking about different times a day, or if I have to pick one?
I'm going to let you pick two, but you can't tell me just double espresso, because it's like, okay, you got to be a little more specific.
No, okay. I'll go into detail. From when I wake up in the morning...
Okay.
Until when I get off the bicycle.
Yeah.
So if it's, okay, obviously if I'm doing 1 hour, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, that doesn't count. Until like 4:35, it'll be coffee, will probably be my go-to.
Okay.
Double espresso.
Okay.
That's something that will, if I have the opportunity, going back home tomorrow,
mm-hmm,
first thing I'm going to do when I get up Thursday morning,
mm-hmm,
is gonna whack out 2 or 3 espressos back to back. It's like, nice. That's a must.
Okay.
And then, well, as you know very well, it's beer o'clock,
yeah,
at 4:35 in the evening. Well, uh-huh, not 4:30, but yeah. So I'd say coffee is my go-to, and craft beer,
stouts, IPAs. Is there a specific one you like?
West Coast IPA. Okay. There's one from in our area in Italy called Brewfest. Their slogan's more beer, more people, which I actually quite like. Brewfest, like brew.
B-R-E-W?
B-R-E-W, fist as in fist.
Oh, fist, okay. Yeah.
More beer, more people is their slogan.
So F-I-S-T, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they do a really good West Coast IPA called Spaceman.
Okay.
Which our local tap room has Spaceman on tap. So that's especially after a hard race and get home, you know, if you've got the opportunity, have a Spaceman as a go-to. I think we're quite lucky now, I wouldn't say the word's lucky, but now that we're not racing, I can enjoy having a beer or two.
Sure.
In comparison to normally this time of year, it's a bit more strict.
Sure.
Yeah, between eating, the drinking, but certainly my go-tos is the espresso and a really good IPA.
Okay. See, I could never get around IPAs because whenever I'd had them before, they were just so thick and I was like, man, this is like motor oil. Like, I feel like I put this in my truck and run it.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, can't do this. But now, I forget which one you gave me.
I think it was a Vienna IPA from a brewery, my pronunciation's wrong, called Pujaste. And I think that's from Estonia.
Okay.
And I think it was a Vienna IPA, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, because I had that and I was like, okay, this is solid.
Oh, this isn't bad.
Much better.
I wanted to get a can or two when I went back down to the local beer shop.
You made buddies with the brewery. Everything's locked down here and you message him on Instagram and be like, yo, can you open up the brewery for me?
I get a little bit here. He's like, yep. So I went down to try to get some, but that beer was sold out. So I've been doing a bit of a degustation, tasting a bit here and there of what they supply.
Sure.
But yeah, I do miss my locals back in Italy, that's for sure.
All right. So, I mean, mine would be like Canadiano. Like, I thought it's just like double espresso and add some maple syrup to it.
Okay,
like
you're telling me about that. Yeah.
Like, that's a taste of home. I love that. I mean, I'll put maple syrup on anything. I love that. That's delicious. Or like Garibaldi Honey is like my craft beer from home. But I think I don't even know if it's that good. I mean, it's a good beer, and that's the one that's my go-to at home.
Okay.
But it's also, I think, just a little bit of taste of home. Like, you know, it's just, it's familiar.
Yeah, it could be.
That's why I go with that. Then the other thing that I find I crave is like kombucha, which sounds like so lame and hippy dippy whatnot. But the thing is, it's big on like the west coast of Canada and the US, and you can get it anywhere there. And like good stuff, not like just the sugary crap that you get anywhere here. Like the stuff that doesn't have any sugar in it, like proper kombucha. It tastes really good, and when you can't find it anymore, it's kind of like that, if I see it in a shop here, I'll spend money for it. Like, okay, that's kind of tricky to find here, but I actually have a much better appreciation for that now that I don't have it all the time.
Oh, if you ever come to Italy, bring your kombucha, because you ain't going to find that there, that's for sure. Yeah. I'm surprised we can get curry powder and some spices here that we find, like let alone Canada or New Zealand.
Yeah.
But compared to back in Italy, they're very...
I don't even bother trying to find it here in Europe. I'm just like, it's more like when I go back to Canada, if I can like go out for a bit and I see it at a restaurant, if I would normally buy water, I'll get kombucha there because like I haven't had this in a while. But you know what's funny is, so we got invited to Easter dinner here with our landlords.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
And we had you ever had schnapps before that night?
I had the Italian version of schnapps, which is called grappa, but I'd never had... Oh, no, actually, I had schnapps at... You were still in Canada when we did the team bonding thing December. One of our Directeur Sportif, who are Werner, obviously, whacks out a bottle of schnapps after a big afternoon hike and pours the whole team a glass, which is kind of cool because I was expecting like super strict like hike, you know? And all of a sudden, the DS and the bosses and et cetera, it's off-season, so they're... passing everyone a unit or a beer and so a glass of schnapps. Like, whoa, okay then.
That was funny because like we're having dinner and then our landlord George, love
great
George
guy.
Such a
great
cool
guy.
he is the reason I would wish I spoke German, just to talk to him about the stuff he does and whatnot. But anyways, he's like bringing out beer after beer for us, and we're like three beers in at this point. He keeps bringing, and we're like, okay, yeah, keep drinking this. And then we keep talking. Plates have gone away now. The kids and everyone else has gone to bed, and it's just the guys sitting around the table now. beers keep flowing out there. And then he comes out with the tray of schnapps. Wooden
boat tray thing. It was cool, yeah. And
for anyone who doesn't, it would be almost like a ski shot, like where you have like the ski, like the
where you
have all the shot glasses lined up, but it was like a much nicer wooden tray he's got. He's coming out with the schnapps. I'd never had schnapps before. I assumed you had them before, and we were like, okay,
Why not try this now.
We'll start going through these, I guess, now. Don't want to be rude. And, you know, you pull it away, and I just smelled it, and I was like, whoa, okay, that's powerful. Like, that, this is going to go down hard.
It'll warm you up if it's cold outside, that's for sure.
But then the thing is, you drink it, and it's not that bad.
It was super, it was, like, very mellow.
Yeah, I was, like, I was expecting it to be, like, Jaeger or something, where I'm just like, oh, okay, here we go. But it went down super easy, and I'm like, oh, this isn't that bad at all. So, you know, the rest of the night goes by, it's great. Man, dude, the next, I don't get hangovers. Like, I'm quite proud of that. The next day on the bike, it wasn't even like my head was pounding. It was like just a third of my brain was like frozen or dead.
Switched off, yeah.
I was just like, oh my God, I felt so shit on the bike.
We had a nice evening though. Let's put it that way. We had a very nice evening.
Yeah, I mean, that was great to have proper Easter dinner, especially when the rest of the world isn't able to kind of socialize. We're locked down in the mountains here, and so these are the, we could at least have like a proper dinner together. So that was nice.
Yeah, that was.
I was very grateful for that. And then the, I guess the other drink combination is, now that we've done so many rides, whenever we're like 5 hours on the ride, totally cracked, still got like 2 hours or five mountain paths to get home. Yeah, I choose the Monster. You always choose the Red Bull.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's, you know, when you see Jack or Felix having the Monster or me having the Red Bull, it's like, yeah, okay.
We're going to get lit up real soon.
Yeah,
but like, the thing is, like, on the rides that we've done, think about it. When the... Every time we've done it,
we just been nuts.
Oh yeah, we're like creeping to the gas station, just like starting to get like angry at the point where we're like, yo, we need the gas station now. I got no more patience for this. And then we have it, drink the Monster, like pack of Haribos and a Snickers, and then like 5 minutes later, we're trading pulls, just murking each other on the roads, just absolute smash fest. And be like, oh, guess the batteries are recharged.
Yeah.
Like, funny, that's such a perfect example of how to be good at cycling. It's sometimes really unhealthy. Like, if you gave me a Cliff Bar or a protein bar or like whatever the healthier options are at a gas station, or a bag of nuts and some fruit. No way. No. You give me the crap, like the Monster and
Sugar
or
peak.
Coke,
yeah.
I'm just lighting it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel great for a couple hours.
Until it dies down and you really need something else after that.
Yeah. Favorite movie?
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Okay. Yes.
Not the old one, because I'm not a big fan on the old versions of movies, but the modern one with Nicolas Cage. Possibly.
I hate Nicolas Cage.
Yeah?
I hate Nicolas Cage.
It's such a good movie, though. It's such a good movie.
Oh, man. I was hoping you'd say...
Going back to cars, that'd be a car I'd own. The Mustang.
Which
one? From Gone in 60 Seconds. The...
I don't actually know the movie.
You know, have you heard of Eleanor? Eleanor?
No.
What is it? Fastback, Mustang Fastback.
Oh, 69 Fastback.
69?
The Bullet.
Well, yeah.
Steve McQueen.
Yeah, similar, but it's Eleanor. So Eleanor in Gone in 60 Seconds is Nicolas Cage trying to... He boosts cars pretty much.
Okay.
And he boosts all these Lambos, Ferraris, Porsches, Jags, etc., etc. But there's Eleanor, which always breaks down when he tries to boost it. And it's kind of like a facelift. It's just... Now it's become a replica. They do replicas, so they buy the originals and kind of do the facelift body style and call it Eleanor's.
Okay.
Pretty sweet.
Okay, cool. Then best thing you've bought under $100, $500, $1,000? Any just like mandatory gear purchases anyone's got to have?
Anyone's going to have, or something that's
something
like,
you just like, everyone should own this. Just something that's awesome that you've bought.
Okay.
Could be anything from like a multi-tool, that's so right thing. That I got you hooked on.
You did get me hooked on that.
You like that?
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, right, it's PSO-Rite, R-I-T-E. And it's like a foam roller category, but the nice thing is it's like specifically for your psoas muscle. Yeah. And as cyclists, especially if you're riding a bike a lot and you're in that hunched over position, or you travel a lot and you're in, or you're sitting in a chair a lot, that psoas gets super tight. And this is like the one tool that you can use to release it. And what I like about it the most is I don't use a foam roller. I honestly don't find a benefit from a foam roller or stretching. I never stretch. I never use a foam roller. I've tried it and it's never benefited me in any way. And the other thing is with a foam roller is if you go and do a massive ride, like a really hard ride, you come back and you're cracked. Getting on a foam roller, it's like doing a core workout.
Oh, exactly.
It sucks. Like you need so much more energy to do this. Yeah, like this is terrible. Like the only time I'm going to use this is when I'm fresh, and then I don't need that. So,
but mine say
that thing is sweet because you just lay on it.
Yeah, true.
The So Right. What's great is it's this awesome massage tool that I think works even better than a foam roller. But you don't need to like get the core workout.
No, I have to move around and find that.
You literally just let your body weight. Yeah, you just lay on it and let your body weight do all the work.
Well, what did I never used it until I used it probably almost 3 weeks ago. I used it.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, completely opened me up.
Yeah.
And then not had to use it anymore because it's such a good job.
Yeah. So, I mean, So Right. People are interested in that. PSO-RITE.
Go get you some of that.
Yeah. How about any, do you have any favorite quotes? Could be like anything, like motivational, life-wise, talk to me, goose, son, your ego's right and checks your body can't cash.
Not really quotes, but like that, referring to that hashtag BTMFD, it's not really a quote, but that's like, in my head, that's my go-to quote is... kind of
that's a good one. It's kind of like harden the fuck up,
exactly. Yeah, I didn't want to use the language, but it's literally like, yeah, harden the fuck up. That's pretty much it's a more subtle way of saying that exactly. Yeah.
Okay, how about the worst advice? Is there any like terrible advice that you really disagree with that you hear in either cycling, coffee, any industry you're familiar with?
So probably I refer to cycling as like everyone. Us cyclists obviously being very competitive because it's a team sport, but it's an individual sport and everyone does it differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think one thing that us cyclists really do is we put full trust in our trainers.
Yeah.
So I've heard so many times from a DS or from a training buddy or from whatever that what I'm doing is completely wrong, I should be doing it this way, but then you get to another guy and he's saying to do the opposite again and you're hearing all these different versions, like everyone's the maestro of how things should be done, you know? Something it kind of does annoy me a bit because it's like everyone does things differently. Look simply how you and I train. We train, okay. We've got completely different training styles. I could give more examples of people I know, some of those American mates of mine who ride for Hincapie, who train in different styles to me and different styles to you, you know? And then you'd hear someone saying that, I don't think there's a right and a wrong. Everyone just going to kind of follow their gut feeling that their trainer has it under control, which is true because we do put our full trust in them. But yeah, many times people's telling me like, stupid, like you shouldn't be doing it this way, you should be doing it that way, and etc.
You gotta learn for yourself, you gotta figure it out.
Everyone runs differently, if I don't stretch, my knees go just get screwed over. You don't even need to have to stretch,
mm-hmm.
You know. So, that's a classic example. People say, oh, Felix, you stretch too much, or Felix, you shouldn't be stretching. It's like,
I love making fun of you at the end of the day when we're cracked, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bed.
Shoot myself, exactly.
You're like, oh, I got to go stretch. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, bro. I'm going to bed, I'm going to watch Tiger King, whatever the bullshit show on Netflix is.
Yeah, so that's something. Yeah, stretching is unfortunately something I have to do, otherwise I'm just absolutely screwed.
That's great.
Yeah, thanks for that, mate.
Okay, last topic. This is something we've been talking about a lot because we've been so excited on this, and as soon as I say this, people are going to think that I've like lost my mind or completely write off the idea, but you got to listen to this and actually haven't tried it, is the idea of e-bikes.
And people are going to think we've become too
soft, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Because here's the thing is like when I first heard about e-bikes, the first thing I thought was like, these are so lame. Like I was very much of like the earn your turns thing that you hear in skiing. Like instead of taking a chairlift up, you hike up and ski down.
You're hiding the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was like, e-bikes are dumb. This is for like people that are fat and lazy and can't ride a normal bike. But then I started to come around to it. So I started to come around to it and the idea of like, okay, you know what? If it gets people on bikes that wouldn't have ever ridden bikes before, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's already a win.
It's more people on bikes and then maybe they end up getting a real bike later. And it's a little bit more, it's some exercise compared to nothing. It's less cars on the road. It's better that way. it's, you know, instead of taking the minivan to drop the kids off at school, maybe you get a chariot, like a little trailer that goes on the back. You take the kids to school that way. It gets people on bikes that wouldn't have ever been on bikes before. Okay, cool. Then I started thinking, it's like, okay, you know what? Actually, I could then go for a ride with my girlfriend or something like that. We can go ride together. Or my buddies that are just getting into cycling in the last couple of years, suddenly we can go for a ride together, because they can go on that and they can go blow my doors off until the battery dies. And then it's
probably drop us up the hills. And
Well, that's, dude, how many times have we been going? Because everyone here has e-bikes. And how many times we're going up the climb at, like, you know, 360 watts, something like that. And then there's someone in jeans with a trailer, little kid in the back, just blows by
us. I didn't even tell you, I got dropped by like a 12-year-old yesterday going up behind Salzburg. On the last part of the climb, he rocked out of like his garage or something. It looks like he's just heading up to like the supermarket on top of the hill. And I was doing an effort, so I was hammering it quite hard. And this little kid just boosts past me on his e-bike. I was like, come on now, like, he's 12 years old.
Or something.
Yeah.
And you just
with his little backpack
like,
on.
But at the same time, you're kind of like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
What's annoying is when they come up to you and like they see like the pro kid or something like that, and they love the kid around here. They love our team
everyone,
kid here.
Everyone, like not everyone, but lots of people are in it as well.
And which is awesome. But when they're in jeans and doing that, and you're like smashing the other ride,
you're
and they're like talking to you, and they're just like dropping you, and I'm like, yo, come on, like leave me alone right now. Like if you're pedaling and you're doing the same work, okay, but you're on an e-bike, leave me alone right now. But anyway, so it gets more people on bikes, more people can ride together, but then when you actually try them, like, man, those e-mountain bikes, most fun toy I've ever had.
I'd love to. I've never ridden an e-bike. I'd love to take one on a big boost somewhere and go, well, you and I were speaking about if we had two e-bikes, we'd go do a 350, 450K day and just go boost it somewhere.
Well, that's the next iteration. So then, like, I tried it on the mountain bike, and, like, I have three KTM dirt bikes in my garage back home, skis, like, tried every toy. I've been really fortunate that I've tried probably every toy under $500,000 that you can try. Like just, or had access, like friends that have like been in a plane or been in like a speedboat and stuff like that, and had access. The most fun, like just laughing like an idiot, giggling like an idiot is like a top of the line, like the Specialized Levo and stuff like that. Like the e-mountain bikes.
The top e-mountain bike, yeah.
Dude, it's like, you're just a hero on the bike. You just fly over everything. It's like the perfect combination between mountain biking and dirt biking and stuff like that. Oh, so much fun. But then, like we were talking about with the road bikes, and then you think, okay, maybe it's good for mountain biking because it helps you get up the hill, and for guys that would be taking a chairlift or shuttling, it makes sense. But like we were saying with the road bike, we just did that mega ride 2 days ago.
Yep.
7.5, 8 hours, 200K, 5,600 meters of climbing.
Imagine if we're on e-bikes.
If we're on e-bikes, think about that. You could do like a 300 kilometer ride, 8,000 meters of climbing. Like that is motorcycle terrain now.
Yeah, it's bike touring.
That's motorcycle terrain, yeah.
Exactly.
Like instead of buying a Beamer GS1200, you buy an e-bike.
You're buying a bicycle,
and
yeah.
The thing is, it's like for people that look at it and say like, oh, well, you're not working as hard anymore. It's like you can work just as hard and the motor just makes you go faster. It's like, imagine if you had been doing all your touring your whole life on a hardtail mountain bike, and then someone gave you a road bike.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the comparison between going from a road bike to an e-bike.
Good point.
Is it just adds more to what
it
you're
gives
doing.
You a bit more
oomph. You can work just as hard, but now you're going to go faster, further, and you can just cover way more ground. Like, that's the thing that people don't... It's not like a motorcycle where you just let the motor do all the work.
It's still fatiguing, for sure.
You can go just as hard. You can get your heart rate up just as high and do just as much work.
Especially
it's just,
if you're wanting to do a 350K day. You can't get on the bike and go full gas with the e-power for the first 100, because then you've got to lug this heavy thing around for you for the rest of the day. So you actually got to juggle it. I'd love to do a big bike trip on one of them.
And so I think what the future is going to be is they're going to make like the super light versions of it, where it's going to be like a 250 watt motor and enough battery power to get you through like 4 hours or so of riding. And that's like for the guy that wants to go road biking and just do it really fast, do these big tours. And then you'll have like the more classic ones, like what we see here, where it's like these huge motors
more
where
comfort.
The people have
exactly.
trailers, and that basically people that want to do like that are not cyclists, that just want to help get over the mountains and stuff, but be able to do these huge tours and stuff. I think that'll be cool. But what'll be really cool is when they figure out how to get like the self-regenerating motors. So when you go down the mountain pass. Yeah,
like these new hybrid cars. Or
yeah, when you hit the brakes, like regenerates the motor. Or even better, imagine if they had like a quick power outlet where you could plug it into like
the petrol station or at the coffee stop.
Yeah, yeah. Where, or not even that, but like for the electric cars where you normally plug in your Tesla car.
Okay.
You plug in your e-bike and it juices it up in like 5 minutes while you're having your coffee. Now you got a full charge.
And then you can cross half bloody Europe in a day.
Really?
It's like driving.
That'd be amazing. I think that's the future. That's what I'm excited for.
I'd be very, very interested to give one of them a go, actually.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Argon just launched their e-bike, and I'm praying we get access to that.
Give it a bit of a test run, yeah.
Go do some, like, mega ride. Just go touring the Alps with those things. Or even, like, bike packing. Like, imagine, like, now you're heavy bike packing stuff.
You can knock off some big days.
Really? But and it's like, now, instead, when you have, like, these heavy bikes with all your bike bags and stuff on them, now you got the motor to help assist you get over all that stuff.
I'd be very curious to try, like, even just the difference between a road version and a mountain bike version.
Yeah.
Just to, like...
Well, the mountain bike ones, they tend to have, like, the bigger motors in them. And, dude, you jump on it, and it's like a rocket ship. It's like, you're just laughing like an idiot instantly. Yeah. Like, this is so much fun. And the thing is, with the road bike, I didn't understand it at first because I was like, well, a road bike, the kind of the point is like the fitness part of it. Like mountain bike, I could understand. Like if you're someone who's going to be taking a chairlift or shuttling up anyways, then this is better thing.
That's a perfect option.
But with the road bike, the fact that you can still go just as hard and you're just going to go faster and whatnot. Like if it's a 250 watt motor, like let's say you're going up the climbs at, you know, 300 watts and now you got a 250 watt motor. Like think how fast you're going to be just murdering up these climbs. 500 plus watts.
Yeah, exactly. It's like going up on a motorbike.
Yeah.
Not a fast one, but on a little...
But you're still sweating. It's still
quiet.
You're still
fatiguing, yeah.
You're still going at the right speed to enjoy everything around you.
Yeah, but obviously you're always going to... Well, easy to say as a cyclist, I think you're always going to enjoy something on your bicycle more than...
Of course. It would never be... I would always have a bicycle before I'd have an e-bike, but an e-bike is a pretty cool thing.
Oh, but I mean, even... I'd almost have a... You know, would you have an e-bike over a touring bike, touring motorbike? I know they're completely different.
Probably. I'd probably have that
first. Me too.
Unless, I'd have an e-mountain bike first. That's a 6-inch travel trail bike, e-mountain bike. That's the most fun
to go up into the forest and just cross everything. Yeah,
dude, you can crush everything on that. Because when you have...
I agree.
It's like the added cost of having that extra suspension that makes it less efficient than a cross-country bike.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter when you got a motor.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes up for that. And then when you get to the downhill, you just slay. It's so, yeah. Anyways, man, that's pretty cool. Like, I think we should probably end it there.
Cool. Thanks for... This is my first podcast as well, so...
Well, dude, I'm just kind of figuring it out as well. I figured we'd just shoot the shit for a bit.
Exactly.
It wasn't really like an interview. It was more just like a conversation.
Yeah, chit-chat. Chit-chat between the boys in the barn.
Yeah. Dude Ranch.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool. All right, good talk, buddy.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that podcast. I certainly had a ton of fun living with Felix for 2 months during the lockdown. He's gone now, but I'm sure he'll be coming back at some point. He really loved exploring all the mountains here with me, and we had a great time. So maybe we'll end up recording another podcast together in the future, but hope you enjoyed that conversation. One idea I wanted to bring up, while if we're going to consider this almost like the coffee edition podcast, is an idea I have, or a thought I have, that I wonder if this resonates with any of the other outdoor enthusiasts. And that is, how many of you know somebody who is into the outdoors, or maybe they just taken up bike packing or camping or hiking, something like that, and you see on their Instagram account or they're sharing photos of them making this with this elaborate coffee setup off in the wilderness somewhere, and they've got the grinder, the AeroPress, the French press, the fresh beans, the hand grinder. They've got this whole big setup for that. And they spend so much money on a lightweight sleeping bag, you know, these super light sleeping bags and stoves and dehydrated meals and all this stuff to get super light. But then they're bringing the whole cafe up into the mountains. And that's something that's never, I've never been able to understand that. And again, I appreciate a good cup of coffee, but if I'm going, what I appreciate more is that, you know, I can just get more done with a cup of Joe. And so if I'm going out camping and stuff, I just bring some instant coffee because I know a lot of people are just going to turn their nose up at that. But for me, if I'm going out hiking or camping or something like that, I'm thinking, yo, we're out here to bag peaks or to see how much ground we can cover, run up these mountains, see how many views we can get. Who wants to be hand grinding coffee and whipping out this whole barista setup when it's maybe pouring rain, you're sitting in the dirt outside your campsite, and you know, you're out in the elements? Like, that's just not comfortable. And you got to lug this stuff around. I personally don't get it. I think it's more a hipster thing. I think the people that are into that are maybe a little bit, I don't know, maybe either first time hikers or campers or bike packers, or they're just kind of starting to get into it. And this seems cool to them, just like, you know, hanging their enamel coffee mug off their backpack, whatever is supposed to be cool. And they haven't really realized how ridiculous this is when you're grinding your coffee as it's pouring rain, when you could just be, you know, pouring some hot water into some instant coffee and it's okay. It's not as good, but you know, just down it and let's get going. I mean, you're not going to be sipping coffee as you're hiking down the trail, or at least I'm not. I'd rather be running rather than sipping my coffee. I'd rather just down my coffee and let's get going. Let's have a good day out. Anyways, that's just my theory there. I personally don't understand the, you know, trying to show photos of you making a frappuccino in the forest. I'd rather just take photos on top of the mountain. But anyways, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Felix. If you enjoyed the show, share it with some buddies. But you know, again, I'm going to keep producing this content whether you do or not. So, I mean, do it if you think someone else would enjoy it. If you want to give a review or something like that, that's cool too. But I'd rather you spend the time planning out another cool day. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I hope you'll listen to some more, or I hope you enjoyed it enough that you'd like to hear some more episodes in the future. Okay. Have a sweet day, everyone.